Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 236 and a half express. That's right, and a half express. Because Cold Coffee and I are going to have to leave for the airport in about 5 hours or so.
That's disgusting.
A little bit of sleep would be appreciated, and we still got to finish packing, that sort of thing. We're kind of up against it, but listen, UFC 243 is in the books. We were both in the building here in Melbourne, Australia, and we couldn't get away without talking a little bit about it because Cold Coffee, I know that you watch the fights from the press room, so it's a little bit different feel than being there in the building, especially when we're talking about a big building like that. Apparently, 57,000 people. I don't know if I believe that 100%, but that's the number that's being given to us, so that's the number we'll go with. It was busy, but listen, I feel like we watched something special tonight, man. We have watched the meteoric rise of Israel Adesanya, and we have said all along that the kid is dripping with star quality. He's dripping with that X factor.
He's Hollywood now.
He's Hollywood. But, man, did he go out there and execute every aspect of the game. I mean, let's start with the walk-in. The walk-in was over-the-top crazy. That is the wildest walk-in. Now, I mean, if we want to go back to like the Pride days and things like that when things were a little bit more over the top, okay. But as far as the modern era of MMA goes, a walk-in like that, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that. I mean, especially for him to be taking part in a choreographed dance. And man, it's just – and as he was walking in, I will admit, the first thing I thought was, if this dude loses, he is going to get blasted so bad for this walkout. But you know what? It was entertaining. It was very, very entertaining, and he puts himself out there. That's what he always does.
And he didn't lose.
The fight itself was phenomenal. Listen, Robert Whittaker was aggressive. He was trying to take it to him earlier. I didn't think Whittaker looked bad. I mean, I think we all thought the early part of the fight would be the most difficult for Robert Whittaker, you know, getting the timing down. I didn't think he was doing bad. In fact, I thought he was winning that opening round. That said, I don't feel like Israel Adesanya was ever in any trouble. I just felt like it was a round that Whittaker was winning. And, of course, then the uppercut drops Robert Whittaker right at the bell. Crazy little scene there because cage side, we couldn't hear any horn or bell or anything like that. So yeah. I didn't think the fight was over. It didn't look to me like that would be enough to end the fight. But it was one of those weird moments where it wasn't clear. And then, of course, you know, Robert Whittaker recovers well enough, but it doesn't matter because Israel Adesanya comes out in that second round and just absolutely starches him. Beautiful finish there. Then, so he kills the pre-fight walkout. He kills the fight itself. And then he scales the cage to make sure that he's flipping off Bohachinha, Paulo Costa. He's yelling at him a little bit, already setting up the next fight, which to me is absolutely the fight to make, the undefeated champion versus the undefeated challenger. You know, they've had a little heat this week overall. It's kind of been building up a little bit. But stylistically, the differences between them, and again, the buildup will be there. It's just clearly the fight to make. So we killed the post-fight too. Israel Adesanya did absolutely everything right tonight.
Yeah, that's for sure. You know, it's funny, going back to the fight, and Robert kind of addressed it in the post-fight. And something I was noticing when it was going on is he was so aggressive in the beginning. He kept lunging. He kept lunging to try to hit him with that left, you know, to try to close that distance. And the whole time I was in the back, I was like, dude, he's got to watch that, man. He's overdoing it. And that all it's going to take is he just getting that timing down on that, because Rob was doing it every time to try to close that distance. He was lunging in with that jab, and then it was like a little bit of a hook. But leading up to this, you know everything that Rob has been through with the past fights, you know, with Romero, and then pulling it out, all these big, you know, sort of gut-wrenching fights, you know, I picked him as well. I was like, you know, it's going to be too much. You know, his power is going to be too much. But Izzy did a really good job of just kind of laying back and letting it come to him. You know, he picked it right, you know. They were planning on Rob being aggressive, having the crowd sort of drive him forward. And that's what you saw. You know, you saw him stay cool and calm and kind of pick his shots, wait for Rob to come forward, and then look for those counters. And it was one of those counters that kind of dropped him. And like you said, he recovered well enough, but, you know, you always wonder how much he did fully recover.
Yeah, because he staggered a few times in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, it was rough. And again, we didn't hear the same thing. It happened so quick, but it wasn't until they played the replay after they were talking about that, you could hear it, you know. But in the action when it was going, because even in the press room, the crowd was so loud that it was kind of bleeding into it.
Yeah, because the press room was set up basically just on the outskirts of the stadium, basically right there on the concourse. So I'm sure you guys were getting
right
the bleed
behind
in.
Some seats. You know? So I mean, it was probably 30 yards from the closest spectator, which normally we're a lot further and we're sometimes down below in another one. But again, the way that this place was built, it's kind of built on some underground parking lot, and it was kind of built up from the water, so there's not a lot of extra space that they can have for the typical areas that we typically have media rooms back in the States. But it was great, man. Izzy, it was an incredible performance, again, like you said, I mean, he came out there and it was a little surprising. And while I was trying to, usually while the walk-ins and stuff is going and I'm working on edits and stuff, trying to keep up, at that point, a PR person from the UFC and one of the ops people that helps run the venue were like, Kenny, you need to watch this.
They tipped you off, huh?
Yeah, they're like, you have to watch this. And I watched the little part when the guys came out and did their little sort of hip-hop haka, whatever sort of thing. And this
that's a great way to put it.
And this is before Izzy ran out. So I was like, okay, that's it. And I started looking down. They're like, no, it's not done yet. It's not done yet. There's more. And I was like, okay. So then I looked back up, and then that's when Izzy came through the tunnel and joined him, and then did the synchronized dance moves and stuff. And then I kept looking around. I was like, is it done now? Is it done now? I was like, that was cool. And I was like, okay, well, let me go back to work. But, I guess he had came and practiced it multiple times, the whole kit and caboodle, of – walking that and then walking out. Like he said he walked out like four times. It could have been even more, but they said that, a lot of times they do the rehearsals. That's usually like the day of, they'll do the rehearsals. But this, I think, from according to what Izzy said, he did it the night before, they did the walkthrough, but he did the whole thing. They came out, did the thing, and he walked the full length of the walkway into the octagon and did it multiple times.
Wow.
To try to do it. So, I love that sort of cerebral side to it. You hear a lot of guys talk about it, and a lot of it just sounds like I'm just talking, they're just talking to hype it up, But Izzy takes this shit serious, this whole sort of mental, I don't want to call it metaphysical, because I love the way he uses it in sort of anime terms. Like, it literally is playing out anime in his head, and he's just like living in a game,
right.
So when he goes through these things, he dives into this library of all the stuff that he's watched or read, all the manga and all the anime that he's watched, and then he allows himself to flow like these characters that for all purposes tend to not confine themselves to just regular beings that just do the day-to-day things. They're practically like the Naruto and all these guys that he loves doing are practically have superpowers,
right.
And so when he goes out there and he's done the Infinity Glove and he was out there and he was throwing signs down, he was summoning shit, and I like that when he was doing some of the different little hand movements and then the teammate behind him kind of went with it, he literally psychs himself into this thing. He visualizes it over and over, and then he just makes it happen. And the other person that we've seen do the whole visualization and then make it happen like this is Connor.
It is so crazy because it sounds, I've said it all week, it's a loaded comparison to compare anybody to Connor McGregor. To throw that name out there, to evoke that name, because Connor is the biggest star in the history of the sport. He did incredible things in his rise, but you're right, take all the craziness that's happened, like post Floyd Mayweather, out of it, but just go back to the glory days of Connor saying these things and them coming true, and him performing, him not freezing up on a stage, but actually delivering even better when the spotlight is brighter. I mean, that is Israel Adesanya. And, it's funny all that you're rattling off the anime names. I assure you, I have no idea what those are.
And
but I'm playing along with it.
And I knew you wouldn't know what Death Note was. I knew you weren't going to hold
but
I raised my hand. I seen that one.
I was going to ask you that. How cool was that? Because I saw that little, what he was writing. He was doing, pantomiming that he's writing something in a book. And I was going to ask him about it in the post-fight press conference. But
Can he do it before the fight or after?
Before the fight, yeah, as Bruce Buffer was introducing him. And I was going to ask him about it, but Casper from Submission Radio had asked me if he could please lead off the press conference, and I told him that would be fine.
He went so many questions on his thing.
I know.
Did you see Brian look over at him like, bro, come on. Like,
I know.
And then they wanted to grab some more at the very end. I was like, bro, you asked him 9 questions to start it off.
Hey, Casper asked, and I let him do it, and that's the last time I ever let him do it.
It was but
he did ask him about that, and I thought that was cool. He said he was writing his name in the death book, right? The book of death? The death book?
Yeah, the death note.
The death note.
The show's death note. I forget what they call the actual book, but you write these names, and then this demon comes, you know, and, like, pretty much kills them.
That's crazy.
Takes their soul or whatever.
Unbelievable. But listen, I mean, to do that walk-in takes balls, man. And I know a lot of people probably, you know, might not like Israel Adesanya because of things like that. I mean, heck, he got quite a bit of booze in there tonight, you know. And I don't think it was
that goes to the weigh-in. I mean, look at the weigh-in; it was dead silent, and he got some booze from that. So I don't think the booze per se were anything to do with the walk-in because I think they were all. They were just supporting Whitaker.
Yeah.
That's all it was. I mean, like, even I watched it. I mean, it would have been one thing if he came and was super cheesy, and it kind of was a little bit cheesy, but they all had their timing down, and you could tell that the guys had had dance moves, had dance timing, and when he came out and did the thing, and he was doing some of the little popping, it was hitting, and I was like, dude, well done.
And I agree. Like, adds character, it adds fun to it. I mean, this is entertainment along with sport, and so I applaud it. I thought at first, I was like, this is a little cheesy, but at the same time, I was like, it is pretty cool to add some flavor, to add some character.
And especially cheesy, but it was fun. But it did well. I mean, listen, if everybody walks out with their brows furrowed, you know, and just to use his words, pounding his chest like his opponent and all this other stuff, it's going to get all pretty lame really fucking quick, you know. So I think not that you need to have every person now coming out trying to come out to a full dance routine and trying to do it because not everybody's going to be allowed to do that. But, you know, having a little bit of personality is never a bad thing.
I agree.
You know, and it would have, if he didn't pull it off so well, it would have probably backfired and would have seemed really cheesy and really sort of like just wonky. And if he would have lost, then they would have been like, oh, dude, why didn't you get, you know, keep your head in the game? But it just plays out even better now because he did get a spectacular win and he had his timing. It looked good. It was whatever. I mean, and
it's fun.
It was fun.
It's fun. And then the performance itself, man, you mentioned it, you know, just how relaxed and composed he stays. You know, he doesn't force anything. He doesn't, as you said, Whitaker, man. I thought Whitaker was throwing everything with full power, man. He was exerting himself and reaching.
Right from the get-go.
Right from the start. And Adesanya just stays so composed and calm and relaxed and picks his shots, and it's the cliche or whatever that he says. I don't throw in hope, I aim and fire, but it's true. His accuracy is just, the precision is there, and the finish was deadly. I mean, had the first round gone a few more seconds, I mean, I have no doubt if that fight would have, you know, gone 10 more seconds in that first round, he probably would have finished it there. So, and he even admitted afterwards, maybe he made a little mistake. You know, he didn't pounce right away. He probably would have ran out of time anyway.
But it was good. I mean, we gave him credit for that. And actually, the commentators gave him credit for that was, you know, they were like, oh, good on him for not doing it. So it seems like he didn't really even think about it. Maybe he partially did think about it.
Right.
You know, that's for why he stopped. But if he's doubting it now, he's like, oh, next time I'm not going to do that. Well, there goes what people were just giving you credit for, was being the better man and being the bigger man and realizing that, hey, you know, your opponent's done. But the fact that he didn't really hear the bell and was just like, whatever, I don't know. It was cool, though. I mean, it was a near-perfect performance on his part.
It was. And on a stage like that, a stadium, you know, this event that everybody was saying was a little thin, and it probably was, but I mean, you had this spectacular moment. I can't imagine that anybody walked out of there tonight and didn't feel like, man, I got my money's worth. I got a show, you know, even just for the main event alone. I mean, I think the card was fun, but even the main event alone was just, I think it was a special night, man. I think it's a kind of night where we're going to look back and be like, man, you remember that night Israel Adesanya did that? I mean, destroyed Robert Whittaker, and then everything else that went along with it, the pre-fight, the post-fight, everything he did was amazing. Robert Whittaker, came and did do the press conference afterwards, which was good. You know, the last time we saw a devastating loss in the main event at that stadium, of course, it was Ronda Rousey, and she didn't show up and do the press conference. And, man, that was not that Robert Whittaker is in any danger of, you know, having his career turn around like Ronda's did that night, but I thought that was the beginning of the end for Ronda. It was bad, and I mean Whittaker just came in there and handled himself with dignity, with class. Certainly upset, frustrated, you know, sad.
Yeah.
But said, listen, I'm not going anywhere. It is funny, you know, he's actually the younger guy out of the two. He's 28. Adesanya's 30. He said, look, I'm still a young guy. I'm not going anywhere. I'm gonna be back. You know, I'd like to work my way back to Adesanya at some point. You know, whether or not that'll happen, I don't know. But I do think that Robert Whittaker is going to be around for some big fights. You know, I don't know that he needs to stay in a number one contender role right now. I'm sure he could kind of slide down a little bit. There's no such thing as easy fights, but I don't think he necessarily needs to be fighting, you know, to stay in that number one contendership right now. I think it's going to take a couple of fights to get back there. But you know, I thought it was class of Robert Whittaker to come in and kind of address everything. I know that he's not always the most excited about doing media sometimes, so to come in and do post-fight, I thought he handled himself a class. And I really do feel, even in defeat, I really do feel like this was the first week that fans really, really gave Robert Whittaker love, man. It felt like he had a lot of support this week, and I felt like it was kind of the first time that I'd really seen that much support.
Yeah, and you kind of wonder if that you know, changed the way that he addressed this fight. You know, like did he let it all sort of feel like it was a little that pressure to kind of really go in there and do that showing? Because he came out swinging with everything, and that, I can't remember the last time I seen him go out there and go with that much fervor to finish a fight so quickly. And, you know, it just makes you wonder if it did impact him and altered the way that he perform, because, you know, even the commentators were sort of saying, you know, Izzy wasn't putting that much pop. You know, he was kind of letting Rob do his things. He was stepping away, letting Rob throw a lot. And it was kind of almost in the hopes like that he thought Rob would sort of burn himself out, you know. So I wonder if carrying the mantle and carrying all those hopes of the Australian people did make him really want to go out there and do something, you know. I mean, but if there's ever a time to, you know, give your all, why not when you have, you know, near 60,000 people there rooting for you? You know, who wouldn't do the same?
Yeah, it was cool. You know? All right, so Bolhashinha, Paulo Costa, he said, look, I want this fight. I'd love to take this fight to Brazil. This fight could be anywhere, right? I mean, it could be in Vegas. It could be at Madison Square Garden. I could even see, man, why would, you know, the people of Melbourne not want to maybe try to bring another stadium show back, man. I think Adesanya could sell out the stadium again. Adesanya Costa could sell it out, maybe in
the people that booed him. You mean sell out the place that people booed?
Oh,
him?
Man, they were cheering by the end, man. They were wild.
Well, they were wild. They were definitely wild by it, but it makes you wonder. I mean,
it's interesting. Where would you like to see the fight? Do you think
probably
it would,
Vegas?
Vegas.
Yeah, I mean, unless you did a New Zealand one, you know, just to give them a proper.
But they got that Vector Arena is only like 9,000 seats. Yeah. I mean, I guess they have stadiums.
I don't know. I mean, like Whittaker is. I mean, Whittaker. The people came for Whittaker.
Right.
I mean, I think a lot of people wanted to see Izzy and appreciated what Izzy did, and I think that's just credit to the Australian fans that are like, they love fights and they love good fights. So by the end, yeah, I don't think it was anything that they were just like, all right, now, yeah, Izzy, he's our guy now. But maybe they're like, yeah, we like winners, you know. But I just think that something like that, he could probably translate to a big fight week, maybe even like International Fight Week or some.
I mean, hope we don't have to wait that long.
I know, but I could see where Vegas or you know, unless you want to try to put him on. I mean, now it's a title, so it's got to be a big event somewhere. So, I mean, maybe – or like a Madison Square Garden something.
Yeah, I mean, they usually do Barclays Center or something in New York, which isn't Madison Square Garden, but it's still New York.
But it's still New York.
I mean, L.A. obviously is a big market as well that you could and, you know, interestingly, as far as travel is concerned, I mean, L.A. is basically where you stop. I mean, a lot of the flights from Sydney and Melbourne and Auckland, I mean, go to LAX. So maybe, you know, people traveling, it's a little harder for the Australians to get all the way over to New York. You know, it's a little further. So I think it's going to be a big fight, man. I think it's going to be.
I think it will.
To me, it's got to be one of the most anticipated fights of 2020, you know, of the new year. So, a big one. All right, well, listen, Israel Adesanya did come back and speak to the media. He was in good spirits. He actually got a FaceTime call from his cousin in Nigeria while he was up there. That was so cool,
that
right?
That was awesome.
And look, even Israel, ever the showman, ever the thing, he thought about it. Let me put the microphone right next to the phone so it goes out there. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He gets it, man. He is the total package, man. And, dude, I just don't know how you can doubt the guy anymore, man. He is 100% legitimate. So here is your new undisputed UFC middleweight champion, Israel Adesanya. Speaking to the media and not starting with me, if you're used to hearing me as the first question, it's actually Casper this time from Submission Radio. So get on him. If you get annoyed at how many questions he asked. Here's Israel Adesanya.
So Israel, congratulations on the big win. Now that you've had a few moments to sort of let it all settle in, how does it feel to be the UFC middleweight champion, undisputed?
I haven't had a shower yet. I haven't had my infamous thought-provoking shower yet. So right now, it's normal. It just feels like, meh. It feels like I'm still lucid dreaming, so... You might see me do weird things just to see if I'm dreaming, but yeah.
Go ahead with the weird things. I was going to say,
over that can before, so that was weird.
Yeah, with the title belt, you spoke about how the interim belt didn't really mean anything to you, and you kind of, you know, put it away in a box. This one you gave to your parents, Femi and Taiwo. Well, why did you decide to do that, and what was that moment like?
I mean, in Atlanta, because Eugene is the guy that built me up in this game to be the killer that I am, so I presented that to him. They created me, you know. So without them, I wouldn't be possible. So, yeah, this the other belt, I put the New Zealand flag on it. So this belt, I'm gonna put the Nigerian flag on it.
Just looking at the fight, how do you sort of reflect that on that one? And also, would you say this was one of the easiest fights when you compare some of the other ones you've had here?
Who did I tell? Like, it's probably one of my toughest tests, but I'll make it look easy. Who did I say that to? Yeah, exactly. I told you guys, I'll make it look easy, and. Oh, fuck, man. I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy. Like, sometimes, like, I have to pinch myself and just be like, that really happened. We just did that. Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you know, you guys see me. Like, you recognize Stars, Submission Radio, from the jump. So, you saw me. You knew what my potential was. And I know you're Aussies, you know. I know you guys like Whitaker as well. But I appreciate the love and support throughout the times because you guys still give us a platform.
Appreciate it. Would you say this was your star-breaking moment? People have sort of compared you to Conor McGregor and things like that with the entrance and obviously in the stadium.
No one is doing anything like I'm doing. You know, this is a 60,000-seat arena. People, after seeing that entrance, I bet you the green-eyed monsters were like, I fucking hope this guy loses. I fucking hope. I saw some of you in here as well. Oh, this asshole. Look at him. Thinks he's a fucking man. I hope he loses. I hope he gets flatlined. You know, because that's just that. It's ingrained in us. It's this tall puppy syndrome. It's this... jealousy that when you see someone shining, you feel like it takes away from your own shine. I'm like, look, I can't dim my shine just because some people feel uncomfortable. Everything went full circle tonight. I danced with some of my day ones, my guys, not even day negative fives, guys that I've known from way back. You know, Jay, I used to look up to him, you know, back in Rotorua. Jesse, I taught him how to dance, and now he's just taking it and run with it. And to have them, you know, set the tone for me and just have fun. And like I said, when I'm having fun, I'm the best in the world. So I was having fun. And when I saw him walk out, it was too intense. And you can't fake that shit. You can put your hoodie over your eyes and all you want. I can smell it. It's pheromones, you know, to start. I can smell it off him. I was like, he's not with it. And he was doing the right moves, but there was no feeling behind it. So I saw everything coming. He hit me a few times, but like I don't like getting hit because not that I'm a bitch or I'm not tough. I am, but it's not smart. But yeah, I just showed you guys I can take it and give it as well, apparently, because I have no knockout power and I got pillow hands. Boo-hoo.
Two more quick ones and then I'll pass the mic on. Just a couple of little things. There was a moment, I don't think it was broadcast, but Robert Whittaker, after you dropped him in between rounds or when the next one was starting, he winked at you. I'm wondering what was going through your mind when you saw that. And also
I looked at him like after the round. The round was about to start. He's looking at the TV. I was like, don't look there. Look at me. You got to worry about me right now. That's done. Like, that's what I was trying to say to him. Like, that's a moment past. Because I could have, like, rested my laurels and be like, oh, yeah, I dropped him. I'm going to rush him now. No. He's a beast. If I try and fight dumb and think, like, I'm going to go for the finish now, he could catch me and lay me the fuck out. So I was like, nah, don't focus on that. Focus on me. I'm your problem right now. Don't be looking at the TV. What dropped me? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
What did you write in your book when Bruce Buffer was introducing you?
So when you talk about anime, you know, you ever heard about an anime called Death Note? Anyone? Hands up. Yeah, so he's the Grim Reaper, right? I have a Shinigami with me. And I just had to write his name because I knew. I was like, he's not going to last. I just wrote his name in a Death Note. And those who know the rules of the Death Note, they know there's a certain time frame that after your name's written in the Death Note, the Shinigami will get you. So, yeah, it is what it is. And it happened as it's supposed to be.
Just last one. Obviously, you had that moment with Paul Acosta afterwards.
Oh, my bitch.
Is he definitely the next? Because you've talked about John Jones.
We'll see.
And when could we see that fight potentially?
I don't know. I have my people call their people. Right now, I'm Hollywood now, Esther. I'm Hollywood. Right now, I just... nothing set in stone. I'm just feeling it. But I like that fight because the casuals, they're dumb. They see a beefed up beefcake like that and think, oh, that's the guy. I'm still all hype, by the way. I'm still all hype. Don't worry. I'm just the hype train. Yeah, so they'll see that and think, that's the guy. That's the guy. They just want to see me lose, but they're going to be waiting for a long time.
Israel, I want to ask you about the motivation for that entrance. I mean, as you said, you know, it's going to bring on haters. There's no question about it. It's also giving you something else to think about and worry about other than, you know, a championship fight.
I told you, I'm a dancer. I'm an entertainer. Like, I don't have to worry about it. We came up with that on Wednesday. I tried to do it at the Silva fight in February, and the UFC were like, no, we can't have that. I was like, oh, fuck you then. And then this fight, this is my show. I'm headlining this bitch. So I was like, no, I'm going to do it my way or no way. Like, who else on this kind of stage is going to do that before they go and whoop some ass, you know? No one. I think James Tahuna is the only one that's ever done it, from what I can remember, with the Men in Black intro, and Anderson Silva did it in Pride with his Michael Jackson shit. But, like, this is... I showed you guys, if I could sing, trust me, Justin Bieber wouldn't even have a job. But, you know, you don't want to hear me sing. But, yeah, like, you got to realize this is the spectacle, man. This is a big stadium. I had to give them a show and set the tone. And there's no one like me, like, no one.
As the fight was unfolding, talk about, you know, how what you were seeing and what you thought. I mean, he was very aggressive coming after you, but it seemed like you were evading him pretty well. I mean, how was the fight unfolding, and what were you thinking?
I knew he was going to start fast, and I knew he falls over himself a lot, you know. And what makes him great, like my coach said, what makes him great makes him really vulnerable and susceptible to a lot of things. And there was a few shots I almost caught him with. There was one time he threw the oblique kick for like maybe the third time. And I used my counter that me and Carl Van Roon drilled like multiple times. It didn't hurt me, by the way. It looked like he hit me. But what I was doing is just bending my knee, not triple C. Just like bringing it in so I can, like, you know, when someone tries to attack you, you take it away. So, yeah, it didn't hurt me. My knee's fine. But, yeah, I knew he was going to start fast, and I just had to take my time and slow cook him. Yeah.
The end of round one, I think it was a little bit confusing for some people because it was so loud we couldn't really hear a bell or a horn or anything. Did you know what was happening then in round one? Did you think the fight was over?
I thought it was over for a split second, but then I don't know if I heard. I think I heard the clapper, so I was like, okay, maybe it's end of the round. Because when the referee jumped in, I thought it was over because I saw his eyes slow. Like, I saw it happen, and I was like, oh, shit. But next time, I'm not going to do that. I held my fist up, but that's stupid. I should have punched him till the referee actually jumped on him. But, yeah, I guess the ref saved him in that one. But maybe it was the end of the round. I don't know. I have to watch the tape again and properly assess it. As for round two, yeah, like I said, he was looking at the screen, and I was like, no, you got to worry about me.
And as you were celebrating, it looked like you scaled the fence. I know you said your options are open right now, but it looked like you had a message for Paul Acosta. What was said there, and why take that moment to address him? I mean, rather than just enjoy it yourself.
And I enjoyed it myself. I definitely enjoyed it. But, you know, it sells the next fight. It sells the next fight a little bit. But at the same time, he's a bitch, and he's my bitch, and I want to make him my bitch. So that's why I did what I did.
You talked before this fight about envisioning it, seeing it before it happens, and then when it happens, it's like a memory. Is this what you saw?
Deja vu. You can. Those who were in here setting up last night or yesterday evening, I came here with my crew, and we rehearsed the entrance And I did it probably about four times or five times. And I did the whole walkout, and I visualized everything. And I did the whole prep point thing, and I stepped in the cage, and I claimed the space. And I did that about four or five times. And I also did the win, the victory, like just visualizing it. And I imagined the whole place lit up with people and loud cheerings and boos and people by the side, what they're saying to you, and just practicing it. And amazingly, when I got to the prep point again before the walkout, it just felt even more deja. There's levels to this shit, man. It just felt like, man, I just did this shit yesterday, which I did. So I was so relaxed. You saw me doing the Carlton when he was coming out. That was a nice song. I like that track. I was relaxed, and I could just see he was too tense. But some people like to be that way when they fight. That's cool. I just like to flow. I like to have fun with it.
A lot of times when you're talking, you seem like you're talking the same language as the fight fans and the fight media, talking about the casuals and Triple C bending the knee and stuff
I'm
like
just
that.
A fan at the end of the day. I'm just a fan. I've said this. I can rattle off some shit from back in the day, but I'm just a fan. I just don't play. I've never, ever since they fucked me up on EA Sports and made my body like Chad Mendes, I've never touched that game. I've never. You need to get me in the studio, do the proper scan, get my proper question mark kicks and everything. So I don't fuck with that game. All I do is play it in real life. Yeah, but I'm just a fan. I'm just a casual fanny troll.
It seems like a lot of fighters, they seem to prefer to stay away. Like, they don't want to be reading all the websites or looking at all the memes on Instagram. And you seem like the exact opposite. I mean, do you think that there's a reason for that?
It's only because it's fight week. You got a lot of time on fight week, so I'm just... It's fun, and that's what makes my thing on Instagram, what do you call it? My engagement on Instagram. Like, I think the average athlete is 2%. Mine's like 8 or 9%. And it's just fun. I got to pass the time somehow. So I just go back, not back and forth in a bad way, but sometimes I just talk to people online and even just casually. I like memes, you know? Fuck, they're funny. Some of the meme pages are funny. Oh, it always happens. I'm just a fan, man.
Well, lastly for me, Rob was here earlier and he was saying, you know, hey, I felt like I was doing well right up until I wasn't, and that we play a game of, you know, like a tightrope walk here where it could happen to either guy. Did you feel like that? Like there were times where maybe he was close to catching you and you caught him instead?
He grazed my lip once. He whizzed past a few times, but I always established my distance, so... I never felt in danger. I never felt in danger. And I said, leading up to this fight, fear is not real. Danger is real, and I'm a dangerous man. I was the danger. Yeah.
Yesterday, after the weigh-ins, we spoke to your family, and they spoke about how proud they are of you. And the moment when you got up on the scale, we saw you got almost a little bit emotional when you saw them there. And your mom was talking about how she wanted you to become an accountant, how obviously it's a family of professionals, but how much they've backed you going through this career. What does it mean to now be the champ? I know they're here in the room right now, and you sort of handed him that belt in the octagon. Sort of talk us through how that felt for you, being able to do that.
It was just cool. Like, I've done it before in Atlanta with Eugene, so to prostrate, you know, and hand them the belt, like, just to present it to them. It's like my two creators. Eugene created this beast, and they created this human. So, yeah. Yeah.
Just speaking of Eugene, I mean, just quickly, he's a guy that doesn't get as much credit as I believe he deserves. He had a big night tonight and a big weekend altogether.
Three-peat. I told them, man, we did it in February. Me, Kai, and Shane, we did the three-peat. We repeat the three-peat tonight.
What does he mean to you?
Are you trying to make me cry?
I don't want you to cry, but okay, I just want to...
He means a lot to me. I'll take a bullet for that, man.
And just finally, I mean, how good does it feel to see Dan win against Al and Brad win? We saw in the back you were celebrating when Brad won and everybody was jumping around from the team.
Never mind.
How did that feel to see that?
Yeah, Brad's fight, you know, trust me, this is his first UFC fight. It's not as... You kind of have to adjust sometimes. Different folks, different strokes. But he showed you his mana. He showed you, like, he's from Christchurch in New Zealand. And with the earthquake, you know, see how they rebuild. They're strong people. Quake City's his name. That man don't fold. That man loves a fist fight. Dan, fucking Dan. Yeah. Dan's just a superstar in the making. And I'm glad he did what he did tonight on this stage. And I didn't hear his post-fight speech, but I heard 2020 at the end, but I heard it's Dustin Poirier, so I'm looking forward to that. I think that should headline Spark Arena in Auckland next year.
Izzy, congratulations on the victory.
The schmo.
You're in the catbird seat. Paulo Costa came here because he wants to face you next. You said in the octagon you'd face him. You just addressed John Jones. You guys have been beefing on Twitter.
Who?
John Jones.
No, I don't want to talk about him anymore. I'm over him.
Well, the question is your decision-making for the next fight. Will it come down to legacy?
I'm looking at...
Or making money.
The division. Nah, fuck money. Money will come. I don't chase money. Money chase me. It's about legacy. It's about moments. It's about being an icon, you know? I'll do what I do and the money will flow. I never ever... During this game, I never did it for the money. Trust me. We're going to talk. But I never did it for the money. I'm doing this for legacy. I showed you guys tonight I can do things that no one else has ever done. From the walkout to the fight itself. It was perfect for me and my team. And, yeah, I'm not doing this for the money alone. I love the money. Don't get me wrong. The money loved me. But legacy, history.
Thank you. Just one quick question. You mentioned in the pre-fight build-up that you were sitting in the nosebleed section watching the Ronda Rousey fight. Here you are now. You've just fought in front of an even larger crowd than that. You're now the unified champion. Did your vision play out exactly as you imagined? Tell us about it.
Yeah. Exactly as I imagined. There's always variables in the way and whatnot, but in that cage, even backstage, I was so calm. I was like, why do I feel this calm? Even Dan was so relaxed, you know? I was like, fuck, should I be this relaxed? But I think I just used my energy properly. I used my chakra properly, and I was able to just control it and channel it at the right moment, which was in the cage.
Izzy, after February, your fight in February down here, mate, I asked you about Africa. And I think you can pretty much call your own shot now. So the question is...
Shot caller.
The question is, mate, do you pick Africa or do you pick New Zealand?
What do you mean?
Well, where would you fight next?
Right now? Oh, definitely New Zealand. Oh, I don't know. I don't know. You're trying to be that guy. First of all, what was I trying to say? For me... The UFC Africa has to take some time. It's not going to be next year. It's going to take some time because even right now, I wouldn't... Honestly, it would have to either be somewhere like Morocco because the leadership and the corruption where I'm from, people will try... It'll be too much, you know? Like, there's just too many red tapes to get through. You know, when I went back there, I saw there's so much fucked up shit happening up in the politics and whatnot. I don't want to get too much into it, but... Yeah, what would I fight next? I don't know. Probably Vegas or New Zealand. I don't know. But I want Dan to headline Auckland, the next Auckland show. And don't do that again if not. Yeah.
Israel, 2.5 years ago, you were competing in kickboxing. You got knocked out by Alex Pereira, and now you're the undisputed middleweight champion of the world with an 18-0 perfect record. If that fight had gone differently, do you think you would be here?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. I mean, it definitely showed me, you know, my character, my, fucking hold up, my phone's buzzing out of my mind. Go away. It definitely showed me, you know, my grit, my will, like my, after that fight, I realized, look, my dog still loves me. My coaches still love me. My parents still love me. You know, the sun will rise again the next day. And so did I. And here I am. I've risen like a phoenix.
Are you the biggest star in the sport right now?
What do you think? It's subjective. I can't say that about myself. It's subjective. You might not like me to think I am, but yeah, if you want to say that, go ahead.
Thank you.
Hey, at the Ultimate Media Day, you mentioned that when
Listen
you...
to this shit. Hold up.
Let's stop now.
Carry on.
You mentioned that when you won, there might be an announcement you'd make in the octagon that would blow people's minds. I just wondered what that was.
What was that?
You mentioned at the Ultimate Media Day that if you won, that there might be an announcement you could make in the octagon afterwards that would blow people's minds. And I was just wondering what that was going to be.
I don't remember saying that. I say a lot of things.
Hey, Israel. Obviously, you're not a massive fan of Paulo Costa's physique, it seems, but what
he looks good. He looks beefy, isn't he? He looks like a swimsuit model, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. He's a handsome man.
But what do you think of his fighting ability? I mean, as a fighter.
It's basic, but that's not a bad thing. Basic is what, you know, my shit is built on foundation. I just know how to work off my basics. He doesn't. Everyone he fights is a punching bag that's just waiting there to get hit. And I can't wait. I can't wait till I fight him. I'm not impressed, to be honest. I'm not impressed by your performance. Yeah.
Realistically, when would you like to have that fight?
I'll talk to my coach and we'll talk. But right now I'm fresh. We can go anytime. Yeah, but not in the near future till I talk to my coaches.
It might be a bit hard to say, but would you think he's...
2 seconds, hold up 2 seconds, please. It's my show, I can do what I want. I just have to... My cousin is calling from Nigeria right now.
Say hello from me.
Olumide Suga, what's happening? It's my guy. Wait, why we lay? You're on TV now, Joe. You don't know. Shout my multi for me, okay? What to you? He's a little bit tiddly. Hey, Mark Bay later. Moshi Shagan.
I love you, bro.
All right, I'll call you later, okay?
All right,
peace. Olumide Suga. He's been blowing me up. Where are you going?
Do you think, I forgot, Paulo Costa is a tougher challenge for you than Robert Whittaker, or do you think Robert?
Fuck no.
Okay.
I just honestly, like I say, like, I came from when I was, that's why Anderson Silva really changed my mentality about martial arts. Jackie Chan first did, then Anderson Silva, because I had the idea of, I think it's just something that's been infused through Hollywood, that you got to be this jacked Rambo motherfucker to be a fighter and be a tough guy, because that's what you see in movies, that's what you grow up watching. So everyone still sees that, and it's just embedded in them that they think that's a bad motherfucker, that's the guy. It's like, nah. And look at me, oh, he's so skinny, bro. He's so, I'm gonna break his face, bro. I'm gonna break him. You got no power, bro. Well, I don't need power. Everyone has power. I have precision.
Is he, you know, when I was speaking, sorry, over here.
Hi.
When I was speaking to you in the lead up to this fight, you kind of referenced Demetrius Johnson and Anderson Silva as people that you wanted to be as great as or even surpass. Is that your idea now with that title? You kind of are looking at their run of title defenses and you want to compete with that?
Look, it's harder to stay champ than it is to be champ. This is most people's, like, they've clocked the game. And then you see a lot of people just fall off after this. Then they don't have that because they've done it. They've done what they wanted to do, what they set out to do. I've done one thing that I set out to do, which is become the UFC champion. Now it's about defending that actively, not like fight twice a year. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of people just expect, it's different. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I'm going to run my own legacy, not like anyone else or compared to anyone else. I'm going to run my own legacy and what are you going to carve my own way?
Eugene kind of said to us that he wanted to see what would happen to you when you became champion. Would you stay as active? Is that what you're saying? You will? You want to keep up this same activity?
Yeah, I saw that snippet of the interview when he said that. He's like, it depends. There's a quote. You know, it's harder to wake up in the morning when you silk and sleep sheets. And silk sheets, sorry. Fuck. Stay woke, stay broke. It's up here. Don't ask me for shit. I'm broke. I ain't got no money. All my money's just tied up in investments, so I need to eat, I need to pay bills, so I gotta fight again.
You know, you said you weren't impressed by Paulo Costa. Who are you impressed with that's currently active at the moment?
Jared Cannonier. I like that guy. He's a cool dude. I like his style. I like the fact that he came down from heavyweight to light heavyweight, now middleweight. I'm impressed with what he's doing. And he still has like another one fight probably. Well, it depends. Depends who he beats next. Depends who he fights next. One or two fights. Then I want to see him some, you know, I like challenges like that. Like Robert. Robert's a beast. I've seen Robert on Tough Smashes. I didn't really watch the season, but yeah, was it Tough Smashes? I don't know. Which one did he come up on? Yeah. But it's about taking names, you know, taking out the greats of this game. So when it's all said and done, it's not about like, oh, he won that belt or this. It's like, nah, he beat the fuck out of everyone that they put in front of him.
Just finally, do you expect Rob to be able to fight his way back into a rematch situation?
I told him in the octagon, I said, I'll see you again. Because I remember, first thing I said, look, you're better than, what did I say? I can't remember now. It'll probably be on one of the things with the UFC, they'll catch it on camera. But I said, I'm greater than I think I am. Because that was my alarm for the last 12 weeks when I wake up. It says, UFC 243, be greater than you think you are. And that's because he said, oh, that Israel fella, he's not as good as he thinks he is. So I took that. I was like, you don't know how I think I am. I'm great. Like, you don't know me. So for someone to try and tell me how to beat me, I don't know. It's not personal, but I just kind of use that as like a little fuel. So I just told him, like, I'm greater than I think I am. And so are you. You know, it's like, I don't know. And I said, I'll see him again. Definitely. Like, he'll definitely work his way up. And he said, probably in 2 fights, I'll see you again.
All right. Thank you, Izzy.
Are we done? Oh, that was fun. Smoke or break.
All right, Israel Adesanya, man, just absolutely crushed it from start to finish. Crushed fight week, did everything.
Izzy, one more question, please.
We love our boys at Submission Radio. We love our boys at Submission Radio. All right, listen, like I said, this is an and a half express because we got the airport looming very soon for a flight. But I do want to kind of talk about the rest of the card real quickly. Dan Hooker. How great did Dan Hooker look? Man, I have been high on Dan Hooker for a long time, but to me, this was, you know, I don't want to say necessarily a career-defining performance because I think those come in, like, title fights and that sort of thing. But if you ever had a doubt that Dan Hooker was not the real deal, man, I thought he absolutely dominated Ally Quinn tonight, and I thought he looked good in every aspect of the game. And again, you know, just like his teammate Israel Adesanya, you know, Dan Hooker gets the game. He gets the promotion side of it as well. He's great on the mic. You know, he uses time to call out Dustin Poirier. Of course, Dustin Poirier instantly comes to Twitter and says, I'm not interested in it. But we asked Dan Hooker about that at the post-fight press conference, and instantly he's got a retort to that. You know, he's saying, what? He wants to fight Conor McGregor. Like, you know, if he wants to chase leprechauns, do that. If he wants a real fight, come get me. Again, I mean, Dan Hooker, he had a great performance from top to bottom, both in the cage and on the mic.
Yeah.
Wow. Setting up cold coffee for the transition there. As you can tell, it is very, very late in the evening.
I was like, what a perfect time to throw some more audio in. I was actually looking at our staff picks. This fight wrecked us. Like, we have some staffers that went 0 for 5. I was just looking at
Simon. Do we really?
Simon Head went 0 for 5. Simon Simano went 0 for 5. He went Whitaker, Iaquinta, Tuivasa, Jumo, and Tafa.
Wow.
Yeah, Simon Head, he got Hooker right. This was a tough one. And that's what threw me off. I was actually just looking at these cards. I was looking at this thing thinking, like, wow, we all really sucked out our picks today. So
he's usually so good at picking up the little set. We've been doing this so long. You're usually pretty good at picking up the little set.
I kind of heard, but I was like, wait, did he say we were going to audio?
That's so great.
Let's go to audio. Let's do audio.
Dan Hooker's performance was much better than Cole Coffey's, I can tell you that. And now
here's Dan Hooker's audio.
I'm a big fan of Dan Hooker as well, man. He's a good dude. So I thought he did great. Sergey Spivak picking up the win over Tai Tuivasa. Got to say, man.
He wrecked our picks.
Oh, dude. This to me, and
credit,
you know,
to Matt Erickson, but he always picks the underdog.
Yeah,
he
Matt
is
Erickson,
the only one that picked him.
He just likes to be controversial and pick fights that he thinks aren't going to. He likes to be the one that is the
only
one.
But he did pick
one.
Whitaker, so that's interesting. Maybe that wasn't was Whitaker. He was the favorite, wasn't he?
Yeah.
No, that's what I thought. So
it's like
not
a pick 'em, I think.
Okay.
More or less.
So it wasn't like he just went straight underdog, but he literally picked he got Spivak, right, and that was it.
Well, listen, Sergey Spivak, you know, looked good after a debut where he looked awful, to be honest with you. I mean, he didn't really get to look like anything because he was wrecked pretty quickly, but,
yeah,
man, it just this to me was a bad loss for Tai Tuivasa because, you know, again, we said it going in, there's no such thing as a setup fight. There's no easy fights in the UFC, but it felt like this was set up for Tai to at least, you know, have a shooting chance at getting back in there, a fair shake, mm-hmm, at picking up a win. And, man.
And he did, but he gave up a lot of size. Like, it's funny because even in the pre-fight interviews, Sergey always was kind of hunched over. And even the post-fight presser, he's always sort of hunched over. And then you're like, oh, he's not that big. And then he stands up and you're like, holy shit, yeah, he's big. He's a big dude. But, yeah, I mean, he just had a way of just sort of overpowering Tai. And there were moments where just felt like, you know, you're like, uh-oh, Tai looks tired again. But then he would pop up and you're like, okay, no, maybe Tai's cardio is good, you know. But for some reason, he just had real issues of getting off the ground. And I think whatever questions have sort of been lingering there when it comes to Tai being able to get up off the ground and have a a good sort of submission base to get out of some of these things.
Yeah.
I think that's still a lingering question that's going on for him, because when he stands up and he can bang, I mean, he's actually pretty quick and spry on his feet and actually moves pretty damn well. It just seemed that Sergey had no problems at all going in for these single leg, double leg takedowns, and he just kind of took them down at will, and then there was no real answer for
That's disappointing, because you lose to Junior Dos Santos, you lose to Blagoy Ivanov. That's okay. Those are accomplished athletes. You know, Blagoy isn't always the most exciting fighter, but he's got a great record for a reason. And those were understandable losses. This is a bad loss for Tai Tuivasa. He's fun, but everybody in the division is going to know they don't want to stand with him. They're just going to try to take him down.
Try to take him down.
That's it. He's got such a great personality, man. He's so fun, but he's got to shore this up. And I don't think the UFC will cut ties with him right now, man. I think he's got too much star quality and entertainment value, especially in the region.
He's kind of replaced, like, the tell me if you think I'm wrong, like the Big Country.
Yeah.
A super likable guy.
Yeah.
That can pull off wins, but then has these moments where he just doesn't get the wins. But it's almost like you can't cut him, you know, because it's Big Country, you know.
Yep.
But eventually it got to a point where, yes, of course you can cut him. It didn't help that he was really sort of talking back and pushing some other things.
Ty hasn't taken the Big Country role of going against management, basically.
Yeah. So, but you're right. I mean, but likable will only keep you around for so long.
That's right. I think he needs to win next time out. Diego Lima picked up the split decision win over Luke Jumo. Listen, I was surprised this was a split decision. This was not the most exciting fight for sure. The way these styles came together didn't necessarily end up being incredibly exciting. But I thought Lima had a case for winning 30-27, to be honest with you, at the very least 29-28 across the board. So I was a little surprised at that split decision, but I think the right guy ultimately did get the win.
Yeah.
And, of course, the main card started out with Jorgen De Castro getting the knockout win over Justin Toffa. Kind of a scary knockout, man, the way he fell and stiffened up. And, speaking of picks, man, I let my emotions get the best of me, man. I had Jorgen De Castro, and then I met Justin Toffa this week. And
Toffa came in. I think that's why it was such a devastating thing. He was coming with everything.
Yep.
And he wanted to get that big knockout, and just unfortunately, you know, speed and technique kind of got that shot, and that's why it looked so devastating, because he was a super strong hit, but then he had all of his force
going
into it.
He was moving forward,
and then he just dropped, just flattened, and it was almost kind of scary, because he dropped so hard. But yeah, I mean, two likable guys. But yeah, it's funny, because I remember you were so moved by the pre-fight interview that you did with him. You liked him so much that you switched your pick.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of reared its head and bit
you in the
butt.
Cost me on that one, man. Cost me on that one. Prelims were on ESPN2 tonight. Jake Matthews picked up a decision win over Rostam Akman. Not the most exciting fight either. A technically sound fight for Jake Matthews, and you can't put all of it on him. Rostam wasn't exactly incredibly exciting either. But this was kind of the middle part of the card. I thought this card started out real fun, got a little bit slow in the middle, but then picked up and finished strong. So overall, entertaining, even though we admitted it was a little, you know, a little light on names here and there. Jake Matthews is still just 25 years old. He's still developing. I thought it was a technically sound fight. It just wasn't exciting.
He said in the post-fight press conference, he's like, you know, a lot of people said that, you know, with the hair on him that you'd get traction. And he was like, that's not the case. He's like, he was actually a lot slipperier than I thought. He's like, I think I'm going to start growing out. And he pulled open his shirt, and he's like me. He's not a very hairy person.
Right.
So his chest is like bare. And he's like, I'm going to think I got a little something there growing right there in the middle.
That's funny.
He's like, I think for the next fight, I'm going to work that out. He's like, yeah, but he told me I'd have traction. He's like, I didn't have any traction. He was pretty darn slippery.
That's funny. You know, it's funny because obviously I wasn't
he's
in the back
hairy
to
dude.
Hear that. Oh, Rustin was a very hairy guy.
I was like, dude, if you have weight issues, you literally have probably 8 ounces. If you shaved his chest.
Shed a half pound of chest.
Shed a half pound just shaving.
Oh, that's great.
Tell me I'm wrong.
Oh, no, I don't think you're wrong.
I don't know how much that weighed, but I mean.
Quite a bit.
Sounds like half pound's a crazy amount, but.
He could use some manscaped.com.
Hey, Manscaped.
He could use some manscaped.com.
He's that plow dog.
Jake Matthews, it was funny, too, because in the cage afterwards, I thought it was funny. He said, you know, the game plan was actually to wrestle, but I was standing in the back, and they said what a great striker he was, so I figured I should strike. It was like, bro, you put in a whole camp with like a game plan and a pre-fight video package makes you change your strategy.
Throw that shit out the window.
Too funny. But again, it wasn't the most exciting win, but it was a technical win for Jake Matthews. He fought well. Callum Potter.
He looks good at that weight class.
Oh, he looks way better at that weight class.
Boy, he was yoked out, man. He looked, but there wasn't any like, I was like, how do I bring that up in the post-fight press without just sounding weird? Like, dude, you looked really good this week when you had your shirt off and you were really buffed out. I was like, dude, this is his weight for him, you know. How do you say that without sounding really weird? But he does look good at this weight. It suits him. And, you know, no more hard cuts and stuff. And he looked really good at this weight.
Yeah, no question about it. Callum Potter rebounded from a disappointing debut in the UFC to pick up a decision win over Mackie Pitola. Again, another fight that wasn't incredibly exciting. Callum Potter was just able to find some holes in Mackie Pitola's wrestling game, basically his grappling game, was able to exert top control. Both of them had some moments on the feet. Callum Potter landed some big shots. But, you know, it's interesting. He took some big shots as well, and he's another guy that was moving up in weight. And his chin seemed to be a little bit better, you know, even at the heavier weight class, which is good to see. I mean, I think there may be something to be said for, you know, not cutting weight. Disappointing debut from Mackie Pitola. Of course, we always like anybody that Yancy Medeiros is hanging around. And so I know they were disappointed things didn't go their way. I know Yancy was super excited for Mackie. So he's going to have to shore some things up in his return as well. Meanwhile, the fight of the night, Brad Riddell versus Jamie Mullarkey. My God, what a fight. I am so happy that these two guys got the bonus that they deserve, $50,000 of well-earned money, man. These two dudes went at it. I felt like Brad Riddell was the better fighter, and he won, you know. But Jamie Mullarkey is as tough as nails. And that third round,
so much
for some reason, my God, if for some reason you didn't see this fight, make sure you find it and you watch it. And if you don't have time to watch the whole fight, at least watch the third round. Dude, you are seeing just – oh, man, you know, and I don't really like when Dana says it sometimes because I hate what it says. He'll talk about, you know, when guys are that exerted, like that they're close to death, you know what I mean? And I hate the way that sounds because the last thing we want to see is somebody die in this cage. But
right.
I felt like those guys had exerted everything. I mean, every ounce of energy and toughness. And, you know, there was this moment at the end where the fight ended. And they're both kind of like kneeling on the ground. You know, Mullarkey's bloodied up, and they both just kind of stop and stare at each other in this like scary little haze for a minute. I mean, it's as tough as you can get, man. Those two dudes left it all out there.
When it gets to the end of the fight and they're both on their knees, and it's just like there's a moment left, and they were just like, I have to get one last shot in. I mean,
throwing punches from the knees.
From the knees, and it was just gruesome. And I loved hearing him talking about the end. He's like, I saw that moment, and I thought I was just going to be able to finish him. And, you know, it was like, but God, that dude was tough. You know, I mean, like that is just – that is what you want to see when it as a definition of like showing heart out there and giving it all and leaving it all. They easily could have just been like, I mean, they were driven to their knees and could have just been like, that's it. Let's just wait these last seconds. And then they chose to keep swinging and showed a lot of heart. And Mullarkey, he could have easily dropped out at any point. He took so much damage and just showed so much heart. And I would definitely be interested in watching his fights again. And it was... That was pretty spectacular.
Absolutely spectacular, yeah. Man. That was Megan Anderson kicked off that section of the prelims with a submission win over Zara Farron, who was making her debut. A much needed win for Megan Anderson, right?
Yeah.
And you could see the emotion pouring out of her. She got the submission win via triangle choke. I mean, basically, you know, we think about her as a striker, I guess, but I mean, she got into the clinch, she got the fight to the ground, she established mount, and I thought. That she was kind of making a mistake and giving up the position, but as the transition occurred, she was able to lock in that triangle choke and kind of cinch it up and get the finish. And man, the emotion came pouring out of her. She yelled. I think she was fighting back tears a little bit. And you know, she had been very open, not just with us, but
yeah.
You know, with multiple outlets coming in about, you know, the battle with kind of depression and anxiety and the mental side of the game that she had to deal with in the lead up to this fight. And so a much, much needed win for her. And man, I guess the emotion continued backstage. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she continued. I mean, it's weird. You know, we think about it a lot of times. How many of us haven't just went to YouTube and just like, my God, look at the comments that people make about just everything.
Yep.
And it's just real fucking trolls out there. And I think anybody, it's hard to not, you know, look at what somebody looks at a piece of work you've done and, you know, not feel like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe this video could have been better or maybe this story could have been better. But, you know, one of the toughest things that I ever had when somebody judged me or I felt like I was being judged is when I was a played in a band. Mm-hmm. Because it's just you. It's you and your fellow bandmates pouring out your heart and soul into a song or into a performance. There's no sugarcoat. When they say that song sucks, they say whatever. They're in a sense saying, you know, that portion of you sucks. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to not take that personal. So when she's reading a lot of comments and stuff about past performances and stuff, she was taking it really to heart and was doubting herself a lot over that. And a lot of that doubt was holding her back. So part of the stuff that she's been addressing over time is just dealing with this self-doubt and dealing with these things that she's dealt with in the past, personal issues that have caused her to sort of not be as free to do the performances that she wants. Like when you look at Izzy and you see what he's able to go out there and do, the dance, walking, and the other things, this is a completely confident individual that has no doubt, has right. no self-doubt about anything that anybody's right. saying. But then you look on the opposite side of it, you know, and you have Megan that for a while now has felt that some of these comments and things that she's dealing with has sort of stifled her performances, but she's been working to get that in check and felt that this performance was one of those examples of what can happen when she has her mind and her body more in check mm-hmm. and less doubt and less things going into it. And part of that is just by learning to tune out all the negativity that's easy to take out there, yeah. you know, and just like that same thing that we always say, I mean, just don't read the fucking comments a lot of times, but it's hard to not.
Even with
Twitter and all that other stuff. I mean, unfortunately, the great thing about them is they give you platforms to become, you know, you can spew on about whatever you want to spew. But unfortunately, the flip side of that allows a bunch of other people to spew their shit
yep.
that sends it right into your mailbox,
yep.
right into your face. And it's tough. It's tough to have your... to be able to just, you know, shuck that stuff off. I mean, I yep. think we all can do a decent enough job to do it.
I can speak from experience.
But
I take it
happens.
Personal sometimes, yeah. too. I take
sometimes
it personal
it just
sometimes,
sinks in.
Yep.
You know, so I can only imagine on the size of the platform that she's operating on, the amount of comments and the amount of stuff that it would take in. So, I mean, she's Brutal. Only human. So, yeah, it was interesting, and she seemed like she wanted to talk about that stuff and got a lot of that stuff off her chest, and she seemed a lot happier and... just, it was good, man.
That's cool. That's
yeah, it
cool.
was very cool.
Speaking of all that online hate, that's why we're relaunching the Patreon.com. Patreon.com, the MMA Roadshow. Go join us over there. Help support the show, and let's build a fun little community over there where we don't have to have conversations with hate and dealing with those idiots on social media.
Right? Or you can pay a really lot and just talk super shit.
Yeah, you know what? If you pay enough, talk all the shit you want.
I will read the shit that you say. Yep.
If you are willing to contribute to the show, I will take your feedback, even if it's negative.
Yes.
Because you deserve it. You're paying for the right to have that opinion.
Yes. Well, one of our guys, I won't throw his name out to embarrass him. He does really well when it comes to donating.
Oh, he's super nice.
He can say what the fuck he wants.
He basically single-handedly funds the show. We appreciate him.
Yeah, but we have yeah, again, thank you all for pitching in there.
Patreon.com, the MMA Roadshow. Help us out. All right, last two prelims real quick. Ji Young Kim picked up a second-round TKO over Nadia Kassam.
She looked good.
Nadia
looked good, too.
She looked really, really good. And the only thing I wanted to say here, just, man, a terrible decision there. Again, not to be spewed. Any hate towards a referee, but a questionable decision there to pick up the mouthpiece in the middle of an exchange that I thought could have ended the fight. Fortunately, it did not impact the outcome of the fight. Ji Young Kim.
He didn't want to hurt that pretty face.
Yeah, that's it, man. He stopped. I thought he stopped basically
was
what
really
was
bad.
An onslaught that could finish the fight to replace the mouthpiece. That is not what you should do.
Yeah.
But Ji Young Kim ended up picking up the win anyway. And Ji Young Kim wants to fight in South Korea in December and wants to fight Alexa Grasso in that fight. And
that was,
you know,
one
what
the name she said? Yeah.
Sign me up for that one. I am
that would
okay
be fun.
With that fight. That'd be good. Khalid Taha picked up the submission win over Bruno Silva. Khalid Taha is a dangerous little dude at bantamweight, man.
There was no reason why he never came back. He just never came back.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you guys never got a winner interview with him, right? So
he never came back.
The guy missed weight and didn't cut any weight.
He was supposed to come back, and they were like, oh, yeah, we're working on it, blah, 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 blah. And then all of a sudden, we're like, getting third, fourth fighters after that, and then they just kind of just said whatever.
Interesting. So, yeah. All right. Well, Khalid saw
it. Because I wanted to ask him. I wanted to find out, like, what was the deal with it? I mean, you're 1 pound away, but shows instead of taking the 2 hours.
Right.
You know, I mean, was that a strategy or something that you just wanted to give that up? I mean, because 1 pound, you could do it.
Right.
You know, but, you know, Kim was the same situation. She was even heavier, but I think she got to a point where she was like, no, you know, I got to stop or it could affect her performance, you know. Could have been the same situation here, you know. It's like, but just say that, you know, like come back and fess up for it, you know. I mean, you were so close, you know. You hate to always, you just don't. I mean, it's a bad precedent to know that, you know. Yeah, I can. You could just miss weight, pay a little bit extra, but then have an extra advantage over an opponent that's been.
That is interesting, right? First two fights tonight. The two people that missed weight both win.
Both win, which tends to happen.
Does tend to happen. Bruno Silva, by the way, again, the Henry Cejudo protege, he's actually a natural flyweight, so I think he's going to try to.
He showed a lot of heart. Showed a lot of heart, man, but the other dude was just strong. Just strong, man. When he was hitting him, man, he was hurting him.
That's it. Well, listen, it was a fun card. It was very much centered around the main event, and deservedly so. Israel Adesanya is a beast, and there are going to be many, many more special moments with him in the very near future, I believe. Now we need to pack up. We need to get done.
I need some sleep.
A little bit of sleep. Head to the airport. Long journey home. And then you and I will be in Vegas next week. It seems like maybe we'll be covering a little PFL action. The young Mike Bond is heading down to Florida to handle the UFC event there. So it is a very, very busy fight week. And, of course, we'll have it covered for you like we always do. In the meantime, we got to head home. So we'll just tell you all, thanks for listening. We'll be right back.